Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
From the Society for Nautical Research, in partnership with Lloyd's Register Foundation, I'm Sam Willis, and this is the Mariner's Mirror podcast, the world's number one podcast dedicated to all of maritime history. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mariner's Mirror podcast. This episode continues our series on iconic ships, in which we ask a historian to explain why their chosen ship might be iconic, or the curator of an historic ship, we ask them to explain why their surviving ship deserves the title iconic. And this week we're on episode 9 of this mini-series. Last week we heard about the SS Great Britain, the magnificent passenger steamship designed by Isambard Kingdom Brunel in the 1840s, a ship which changed global shipping and which set a foundation stone for extraordinary leaps in technological and design innovation, leading up to the ship we are covering today, the RMS Mauretania. Launched in 1906, just 61 years after the SS Great Britain, the Mauretania turned everything on its head all over again. Just like the SS Great Britain, she was the largest ship in the world at the time of her launch. But she was 2.5 times longer than the SS Great Britain. That's a staggering jump in terms of ship design. And at just under 45,000 tonnes, she was 15 times larger in terms of displacement. And so to find out more about how the fascinating history of giant passenger liners took a giant leap forward in 1906, I spoke with Max Wilson, archivist at the Lloyd's Register Foundation, and we met up in the Lloyd's archives, temporarily located in Cannon House in the Royal Arsenal in Woolwich. The Lloyd's archives are the best place to explore the history of so many ships, but particularly something as groundbreaking as the Mauretania, because Lloyd's were responsible for certifying the safety of the vessel. This means that there is a whole host of magnificent material to see there: letters, record books, ship plans, technical drawings. And they reveal the ship and the achievements of her designers and builders in the most wonderful detail. If your interest is piqued by the sound of the documents we discuss, don't fret, because with you in mind, we filmed the interview and also those documents. You can find that film on the Mariner's Mirror podcast YouTube channel and on the Society for Nautical Research's Facebook page. So do enjoy. It really is a wonderful little glimpse into a splendid little archive. Max, let's start by talking about this amazing building we're in. Where are we? What's going on?
So you're in our temporary archive store while we're in the middle of our office refurbishment. And this is the Cannon House. It originally would have been an artillery factory providing armaments to the Army and the Navy from about the 1850s onwards.
But now it's just full of your wonderful old registers and material.
Yep, now it's just, archives and library materials and, interesting.
Good stuff. Well, I got in touch because we're doing this series of iconic ships, and I said, I bet you've got some good iconic ships, records of iconic ships in the Lloyd's Register archives, and you certainly do. But one of them you pulled out and you said, I know what, let's talk about the Mauretania. So what was it about the Mauretania that made you think, oh, I know what, let's do this one?
Well, she's just a British icon, really. She's just an amazing example of luxury, the height of luxury travel, at a really pivotal time in history. She kind of dominated, for a very, very, admittedly a very brief period. She was the world's largest ship, the world's largest moving structure. She held the very fastest record, the fastest average speeds crossing the Atlantic for about 20 years.
Longer than 20 years?
Yeah, so it's, and she was just, as I say, just really, she came to define luxury, really. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when she was eventually broken up, sent a letter of protest. and he famously hated sea travel.
Really?
And he absolutely fell in love with Mauritania.
Wow.
What was it about the ship then? Why was it? So was it just so unusually lovely?
Yeah. He hated sea travel, and he described her as having a soul you could talk to, which is interesting. She was a very opulent ship, opulent on, I think, a completely different scale to all of her predecessors. We know things like the staterooms in the very first class, in the first class areas, they were made with things like, I think it was 28 different types of exotic wood, for example, were used. And she had things like, an open veranda cafe that was modelled on the orangery in Hampton Court Palace and, lots of interesting things like that, and Turkish baths and swimming pools and other kinds of interesting.
Happened to the times we live in? Can you name 28 different types of exotic wood?
I can't. No, not personally.
Mahogany,
oak, elm.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Someone should do some research and find out what those 28 different types of exotic wood were on the Mauritania. It's really interesting, isn't it? Where you get to a period in the development of ships and shipping where extreme attention to detail and luxury almost seems taken for granted, certainly by the time they're building Titanic and Olympic. But what really was with the Mauritania, it all, from Brunel onwards, it suddenly it settled in the Mauritania. And what's fantastic about the Lloyd's Register archives is you've got loads of written material relating to the Mauritania. So what did you manage to find?
Well, the very first document that really leapt out at me does cause a bit of a problem for the interview. It does slightly, yeah. In actuality, I shouldn't really be showing you any records from Mauritania. We have a memo from 1904 during the very kind of early design phases of Mauritania and Lusitania from our chief, Harry John Cornish, basically instructing all Lloyd's Register surveyors and clerical staff not to divulge any details on any in any circumstances of Mauritania's construction.
Wow.
It
was top secret.
Yes, yeah. They the Cunard line, that had commissioned Mauritania and Lusitania they had a real bee in their bonnet about trying to protect these designs from industrial espionage. I suppose really to try and maximise the impact that they would have when they finally took to the seas. And they didn't want anything to get out to the media or the press.
It sounds like a balance between concern of other people stealing their ideas, but also wanting it to be like what we'd see as a press release now, where everything can be shut down. No one wants to tell anyone about the details of what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a huge amount of money. Mauritania and Lusitania were built pretty much with government funding.
How did that work?
So it was really, I suppose, the British government loaned the Cunard line, £2.6 million in the very early start of the 20th century. So that would be about £200 to £250 million in today's money.
Wow.
And they gave it a very, very low interest rate of about 2.57%. The idea was that she would have to pay this over 20 years. So really she got a very good deal, and the British government were very invested in making sure that Mauritania was built. In part really to try and really sort of secure the Cunard line and also secure this idea of British engineering as being the best in the world. Mm. There was only one caveat to the loan, and that was that she had to be able to offer her services in the event of a war as an armed merchant cruiser.
So what year are we talking about here?
This was in about 1903.
Right.
So interesting that they were already putting themselves Britain was already starting to put itself on a war footing at this stage. And some of that's already visible within her design as well.
Really? Like what?
So her boilers, for example, she had a slight break with other liners, her boilers were in the very middle of the ship with two very long 350-foot coal bunkers either side. And apparently, supposedly, this was a deliberate decision in order to protect the boilers and the furnaces from the worst effects of artillery fire in the event that she got caught up in a sort of a skirmish or a flurry of activity on the sea.
It's fascinating, this idea that the government are anticipating a war, isn't it? And are so conscious of the pressure that's going to come on merchant shipping.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and as I say, you know, these designs start to reflect that. And it's very interesting that particular caveat was put in with regard to her loan. I think, you know, luckily she was never used as an armed merchant cruiser, ironically, because at the outbreak of the war, she very quickly made a dash for Halifax, Nova Scotia, where she was awaiting instructions from the British government to be converted. And they actually turned around and said, no, she's far too big and her fuel consumption's far too large. So, you know, they actually then said, you can go back to civilian service. And she very briefly did. But of course, very few people were willing to travel across the Atlantic during the First World War. And so she spent the next 9 months, essentially in dock in Liverpool. And then she really then started to be used as things like troop ships to the Dardanelles for the Gallipoli campaign and then as a hospital ship later on, and then later as a troop ship again.
I wonder who got the first class cabins on the way to the Dardanelles for the last ever trip.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of records, have you got certificates and entries in the register book for her?
Yes. So we have 341 records for specific archive documents for Mauritania.
Wow.
That's just Mauritania. We also obviously classed the Lusitania as well, who's nearly identical to Mauritania. I think Mauritania is 5 feet longer. In terms of what we have for Mauritania, it's reports of survey, including her first entry report, which is kind of, I suppose, her sort of birth certificate,
right.
The very first time she formally enters our records. We have all of the kind of correspondence that goes back and forth between Lloyd's Register and the committee that's deliberating on all of the designs.
It's wonderful that moment when someone would have written a kind of Mauritania for the very first time on an official document.
Yeah.
It is alive.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's really interesting. You know, and of course, there's lots of back and forth about certain designs and things like that and the machinery. The machinery itself was very... cutting edge, and I think there was a lot of back and forth about whether or not it was possible in such a large ship. In addition to that, it's lots of certificates, as you say, and obviously we have our register of ships, which includes lots of references to Mauritania each year throughout her life until she's finally broken up in 1935.
And what does it say about the ship? Is it simple information?
If you've ever seen any of the survey reports that we have, they have all of the information related to a ship's kind of ownership and build right at the very top, almost as, you know, and it's this information which goes into the register book entry. So it's everything to do with the name, the ship's master, or the captain, the tonnage, the length, obviously the classification within the middle that she receives, as well as where she's built, who built her, who built the engines, what kind of engines she's got. So actually, really, in what is about probably maybe half an inch worth of printing space, that information is all there just on a line in the register book. So you can find everything you need.
And what about technical drawings? I mean, these are all the things that we need to be able to work out whether Mauritania is really deserving of the name Iconic.
Well, technical drawings, yeah. So we have a lot of different types of technical drawings and plans. Things like boiler plans, engine plans, shafting plans, pumping arrangements, things like that. But I think in terms of her machinery itself, I think, her boilers, I mentioned before, they're incredibly, they're really interesting. Interesting, we have a record within the archive, which is a celebration, of the jubilee of the Walls End Slipway and Engineering Company, which was the company which secured all of the contracts to create Mauritania's machinery and engines and boilers. And one of the things that they boast about is the fact that they actually, their boiler-making department, which was a huge warehouse building in Newcastle, it basically had to completely... Well, it needs to be extended just for Mauritania's boilers, and they had to fit new types of hydraulic winching gear and cranes with lifting capacities of up to about 100 tonnes.
Yeah.
So they're really huge, huge boilers, nothing like it before.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
A theme that happens again and again in the history of shipbuilding, where someone says, oh, well, let's build a bigger ship. And then all the people who have to do it go, well, we can't. We don't have, our cranes are not big enough. Our warehouses are not big enough. Our slipways are not big enough. We can't do it.
Yeah.
So they have to kind of go back three or four stages. So, you know, she's changing the whole nature of shipbuilding in her own presence, isn't she?
Absolutely. It's, you know, and I think one of the, you know, I think it's fair to say that the Cunard line had a huge vendetta, really, to try and, you know, really put Mauritania on the very top in terms of being the largest ship in the world, but also being the fastest. You know, it really sort of stuck in their craw that Norddeutsche Lloyd, another rival German shipping line, their ship Kaiser Wilhelm de Groes was launched in 1897, and then in 1898 she took the Blue Ribbon to the fastest Atlantic crossing record from Cunard's Lucania. This is something that they were particularly eager to try and get back. And they, as a result of this, this is what pushed them to exploring the idea of sort of direct action steam turbine machinery. And Mauritania is the very first transatlantic express liner to use this type of technology.
Ah, I like the idea of this British the German imperial competition before the war, as experienced in a battle between liners. And then how quickly was it before people realised just how quick Mauritania was going to be?
Well, I think it's very interesting. They kept their speed trials very, very secret as well. Lloyd's Register was there present at the speed trials. And interestingly, they refused to to send back any information by wire. And so the times that they documented on board were sent back and forth via carrier pigeon.
Really?
Because they could not afford for it to be intercepted by anybody else. And so really, I think it was actually very, very quickly that this steam turbine technology was seen to be something that was actually going to change shipping forever. This was a process that had been designed by Charles Algernon Parsons. And demonstrated at the Spithead Naval Review in 1897, where his little private yacht, Turbinia, was basically zigzagging around all of the largest and fastest ships of the Royal Navy and completely outran them. So Mauritania, and interestingly, Turbinia was actually present on her at her launch to steam alongside her.
That's lovely.
Really, yeah, so it's a really interesting one. She was the very largest application of this technology at that point.
And her engines were only part of this, such an important story. And if you look at the plans of Mauritania, you realise how much is involved in one of these ships, how multi-layered they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really, really fascinating. Rudyard Kipling wrote about Mauritania. He actually penned a poem called Secret of the Machines and referred to her as the nine-decked monster city, which was, huge, huge ships. We have a particularly interesting set of plans, you know, lots of very, very long plans which give full details of all the decks, everything, all to the arrangement of where the piano is in the first class saloon, to where all of the stools are in the bar and all of this sort of stuff. But we've also got this amazing sort of general arrangement plan, which has an overview of all of these decks, one over the top and then the profile right at the very top. showing her in steam. And it's, she's an absolutely monstrous ship. It would have been quite amazing to have seen. And about 50,000 people came out to see Mauritania because it was, as much as they were trying to keep her secret, it's very difficult to keep a ship like Mauritania secret forever.
Yeah, especially when you can say this is the largest ship any of you will have ever seen before.
Yeah, exactly. So she was definitely a technical and engineering first.
And if you assume it's a period before Instagram, right? So, now you'd be able to kind of go and have a look around without actually going on board. But it must have been such a treasure for those few who were allowed on in those early years.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, by the very end of her life, she was captain for most of her life by Captain Rostron, and she gained the nickname the Rostron Express. Rostron obviously more famous for, sort of gained international fame as a result of being the captain of the Carpathia, the ship that had come to the rescue of all of the Titanic survivors. And then he was the captain from about 1915 to 1916, and then again, I think, from about 1919 till 1928.
Interesting bloke. We should get him on the podcast.
Yes, and we have those records in the archive as well for the Carpathia. So, we're very lucky.
Well, we might come back and do the Carpathia at some point. He sounds fascinating.
But,
And I love the little booklet showing the... All of the kind of the technical aspects of the Mauritania. Tell me about that.
Yes, that's I think it's possibly one of my favourite items for Mauritania. So it's a 14-page booklet, and it's a celebration, I suppose, of her electrical equipment and the machinery on board specifically. And it goes into a great deal of detail about things like the switchboards, the distribution boards, the telephone exchanges.
They all look like they've been invented by a mad scientist.
They do.
I wonder if that's what they looked like at the time. Everyone's like, well, that's crazy. That's clearly not going to work. Or whether it was kind of normal.
They make a very big deal out of the fact that they use something called a magneto system, which operates with a master clock. And there were about 48 clocks all throughout the ship, all being at the same time. And all to the same precision. That seems to have been something that they were very proud of.
That's impressive, isn't it?
Also things like an electrically powered dishwasher. They've got a very great picture of the electrically powered dishwasher, which was really like state-of-the-art stuff.
It's like the people in charge of building the ship, they knew they were innovating with the overall construction, but they weren't going to let it stop there. Everyone was told to innovate. Everything's got to be new and crazy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think all of the first class spaces they were so incredibly opulent, and they were by today's standards it's unthinkable. But they were using they had strict instructions. The designer Harold Pito, he came up with a design that all of Mauritania's interiors needed to be to Francis I style, which is from about the 15th to the 17th centuries. So. This is this technical innovation, this huge, huge technical innovation that people would have boarded on, but then they would have found themselves sitting in something that looks like Hampton Court Palace or looks like,
Versailles.
Versailles, yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. Interesting awareness of history. I wonder why they chose that. Who knows?
Very strange.
Might have been a personal choice, or maybe that was their perception of what the ultimate luxury would be.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Mm. You also showed me the wonderful drawing, so simple, of the design of the hull of Mauritania, showing how she sits on the crest of a wave. I love that. It looked, I don't know, maybe kind of 40 years ahead of her time.
I know what you mean, yeah. It's a sort of like a kind of a line drawing, I suppose, of Mauritania's kind of shape with this sort of inky watercolour blue wave.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It's like it's been done by a Swedish architect in the 70s.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a really interesting one. They were really worried that with this technology and with a ship of her size, that there would be an issue with how she would sit and ride the waves, as she was crossing the Atlantic. And so, interestingly, people, this machinery never having been used on this scale before, people throughout her life always complained about things like the vibrations of her engines and things like that, which was something that plagued her throughout her life.
Okay.
But despite that, even with things like the Olympic class liners, which used a very different, a reciprocating engine, Mauritania still retained all of these records. Despite not, having been surpassed in size and other forms of technology,
she keeps that speed record for 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for 20 years until and you know, they were so desperate to hold on to it that by about 1929, when a ship, another Norddeutsche Lloyd Line ship called the Bremen breaks the record, actually really only by a fraction, only by a real fraction, Mauritania's captain asks permission for the Mauritania line to do, for her to go into dock, have her machines and engineering, her machinery and her engines and boilers recalibrated, and then to have another crack at regaining this record, which unfortunately she fails. She breaks all of her previous records on this time, but sadly she falls short by really a fraction.
Do you think that's about having a place in history, wanting to break that record, or is it more simply about people will want to come on board us if we're the fastest?
I don't know. I think it's
hard-nosed commercialism, or you know.
I think that there's definitely there's definitely a prestige element. I think the Cunard line, they're able to put it on all of their posters that they have the blue ribboned holder, one of the fastest liners in the world, and that's an interesting selling point, I suppose, for Cunard. But also you've got the masters themselves and the crew. They take a great deal of pride in being a part of creating that record, I suppose, as well. So you do find that the ship's masters are also quite instrumental in really pushing to try and regain these records, or to go for these records, because it is just a matter of a great source of pride.
And finally, let's just talk about safety at sea. I mean, looking back on Mauritania now, is she seen as being a good design, a safe design? I'm just thinking about obviously what happened to Titanic, not long afterwards.
Yeah, she's. I think obviously Titanic changed shipping safety. Afterwards, when she sank, Mauritania was actually in Queenstown, modern day Cove in the Republic of Ireland, and she was going to be carrying some of her mail as well for Titanic when they heard the news that she had been lost. But I think with the border trade inquiry that occurred after the loss. I think it's fair to say that I think that the issue, a lot of people always made a very big issue of the number of lifeboats. This was, I think, sadly, something that was industry-wide as a problem. And immediately after that happened, both the Lusitania and the Mauritania were fitted with even more like clinker-built lifeboats.
Yeah, proper lifeboats.
And in 1912 as well, it's decided that actually they need wireless technology on all of their ships, in the event that anything like this ever happens again.
So in some respects, she's a ship that's way ahead of her time with all of these new inventions. In other respects, the Mauritania is one. It's very much of her time with too few lifeboats and quite rattly.
Yeah, I think so. It's an interesting kind of juxtaposition, and that particular booklet that we referred to earlier, which goes into all of the electrical installation on board Mauritania, they're very proud of some of the safety mechanisms, even with regards to all of the electrical equipment, the fail safes and the fuse boxes and things like that. But they've also got things like electrically powered boat winches and things like that for lowering the lifeboats down, and all of these things were, obviously state of the art, but were intended to try and, with the best will in the world, to make things safer, ultimately. But I think there were still fundamental things that needed to be done anyway, regardless, across the industry.
Yeah. Well, fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for talking to me, Max.
No, my pleasure.
Very many thanks for listening. Please make sure you go back and listen to all of our previous iconic ships episodes. There's lots of wonderful stuff to explore there. You can find all of the episodes and so much more on the Society for Nautical Research's website at snr.org.uk. Please also check out the Mariner's Mirror podcast's YouTube page, where there's some wonderful innovative material bringing the maritime past to your eyes in ways you will have never seen before, most recently in our use of artificial intelligence and digital artistry to bring ships' figureheads to life. There's a crazy sentence for you. Best of all, please join the Society. It doesn't cost very much, and the money you donate will help support this podcast. It will help publish the Mariner's Mirror quarterly journal. It will help preserve our maritime heritage. And best of all, if you are a member, you get to apply to come to our annual dinner on the gun deck of Nelson's HMS Victory. Now, there's an iconic ship for you, and it's something you will never, ever forget.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.